Welcome to Collaboration is Queen, a New World Women production. I'm your host, Dawn Morningstar, one of three co-founders of New World Women. Sean Vougeot, Mecca Page, and I have collaborated to co-create New World Women, a women's organization that shares profits with women to reward them for expanding their consciousness and nurturing themselves. Our unique offering supports women's self-empowerment and economic sufficiency, and it emerged out of a respectful, inclusive, co-creative process based on collaboration at every turn. And fun. Yes, there was lots of fun. The three of us are often overheard saying, collaboration is queen. We invite you to welcome more collaboration into your life, knowing that you don't have to do it alone, whatever it is for you. Dust off your crown and enjoy. And always remember, collaboration is queen.
So I have the privilege and the pleasure to share with you a little bit about our beautiful luminary, Dale Allen. She is a veteran of corporate, commercial, and creative communications, host, interviewer, and filmmaker. She is a firm believer in the reparative power of the sacred feminine. Take that in. As a public speaker and performer, she has captivated audiences all across the globe. Dale has spent 25 years presenting her thought-provoking work titled In Our Right Minds. Having first gained attention as a musical theater show, it has grown and taken on various mediums. After receiving acclaim as a multimedia dynamic one-woman show and an award-winning film, In Our Right Minds is now a highly anticipated book. In Our Right Minds is a sweeping journey covered efficiently and clearly in short order, judiciously illuminating the history and relevance of the goddess archetype, its impact on societies where this archetype is active, as well as its connection to our right brain way of both attending to and shaping our world. In Our Right Minds garners praise for being well-researched, organized, clear, level, balanced, without blame, love that part, and inclusive of all the human family. And if you'd like to learn more about Dale, you can visit her websites inourrightminds.net and daleallenproductions.com, and we'll put that in the follow-up email. So welcome, Dale. We'll have you unmute yourself so we can hear your magnificent voice. Welcome, dear one.
Thank you so very much for that beautiful, beautiful introduction. I'm going to dive right in.
Beautiful.
Dive. Here we go.
Beautiful. Well, we have our question for you. And the question is, what is your vision of a new world? And as a New World Women luminary teacher, what role do you see New World Women having in its manifestation? Like, what drew you to want to be a part of New World Women?
Ooh, you know, it's interesting because in the presentation I'm about to offer, I feel that the value I find in New World Women is woven in. We are now coming together in this sacred space. This is a very healing experience when we're together like this. And when we come in with intention and we mirror for each other our beauty, our wisdom, our divinity, this is a very healing thing that starts within ourselves, deeply affects us, and then affects everybody that's around us. So that's kind of woven in. New World Women and coming together, bringing women together in this way is absolutely critical to creating the kind of world that we want to see. Women need each other and need to lift one another up.
I love that. Well, without further ado,
go on.
The floor is yours.
Before the cultures of power began, before the patriarchy, before the written law and the great sky god as creator, the goddess was known. All around the world are found the evidence of the celebration of the mother of all creation. All around the globe are found the remnants of the sacred female, the honoring of the cycles of nature and the cycles of woman, the honoring and replenishment of Mother Earth, the gratitude for all she gave forth, the reverence for birthing, for nurturing, for life. A culture not of power and ownership, but of direct relationship to the mother who nourishes all and whose only message for all her creation is live in fullness and joy, live. The hearts of men and women cry out for her reemergence, for a world wherein the feminine, a part of all men and women, is held sacred, and the masculine is expressed in balance beyond the confines of a culture of power. Those words, that passage, was first heard in my original music theater production. So those words have deep meaning for me, and they have echoed through a 25-year period of my life. The original musical featured a cast of 7 women of different ages and shapes, sizes, and colors. What a splendid cast they were. I wrote the musical because I had personally experienced something that was so deeply transformative and moving that I simply had to share it with others. It wasn't right to keep it to myself. I had to share it. I know you understand what I mean. And the arts, creativity in the classic sense, that's my playground. It's always been my playground. So I wrote the play after the energy of the sacred feminine had entered my psyche and my life. And at that time, I devoted myself to learning as much as I possibly could about the goddess. I applied all of my academic skills. I read all the works of scholars, mostly female scholars, archaeologists, anthropologists, cultural historians, and male scholars too, mythologists, poets, psychologists. And of course, the goddess herself spoke to me directly in my bones, my belly, my womb, my blood. Images of the goddess from the Paleolithic and Neolithic eras filled my eyes and my spirit with remembering. But I will say that when I first heard the term goddess, when it really was crossing my path, I did not like the term. And I like sharing that because I think that's an experience that happens with others as well. I've always been, as far back as I can remember, sensitive to energy. So seeing things in this realm and beyond, the seen and the unseen. I was raised Catholic. I was raised in a progressive family. So I had gotten the signal that it was good to be a spunky girl. And I'm so grateful for that. So I got the signal that I could do anything. So my experience with my family and with my family religion was a good one. I liked all the statues in church. I especially loved Mother Mary and the baby Jesus and the statues of all the female saints. And for me, God, as I knew it, was in everything and in everyone and in nature, my beloved nature, the woods. I love the woods and the rivers and the oceans. And for me, God is becoming and complete at the same time. So this was really my understanding. So when I first heard the word goddess, I didn't like it. I didn't want to have to apply a gender to the divine, to the energy in all things. So at that time, I was at a crossroad in my life. The path that I was on had ended. So I was in a void, a painful void. I was in a liminal space. Endings aren't fun. But fortunately, and I'm not exactly sure why, but fortunately, I chose to stay in the void rather than dive into a new path with all of my kind of ready gusto that says, okay, on to the next thing. I got the signal to stop and to stay and to pull inward. And I did. I pulled my energy in about this close, and it's usually a lot bigger than that. And I just held that space in. Well, again, it's pretty comfortable because, the world that we're in wants to know what we're doing. It always wants to know what we're doing. And to have the answer, well, I'm kind of in the void right now, and I'm just kind of pulling my energy inward right now, is not usually a satisfactory answer. But I did it, and that void changed my life. It was during that time, during that void, and it was painful. It was a sad time. But a new voice was whispering up from within me. And it was coming up from my center. It was coming up from deep within. And it was different from what I always have and still had, my kind of direct connect source of information, if you will. This was coming up from within, and it was distinctly female. And that was different for me. And the term goddess kept crossing my path. And I started thinking, okay, so why does the term God encompass all to me and feels beyond gender? And why does goddess feel so awkward? So it's kind of the jig was up. I knew I had to really look into this whole goddess thing, especially since I'm in a female body. So in my studies, I read the words of Carol Christ, PhD, religious studies at Yale, who wrote, "Theologians frequently assert that God has no body, no gender, no race, and no age. And most people state that God is neither male nor female. Yet most people become flustered, upset, or even angry when it is suggested that the God they know as Lord and Father might also be God the Mother or Goddess." So I really dove deep, and that began my journey 25 years ago. So this new energy was feminine energy was rising up within me. And like most women, I didn't have access to or models of the fully whole woman, the fully whole feminine energy. I'm fortunate that I had strong women in my family line, very fortunate about that. But even they didn't have these models of the fully whole and complete and full feminine energy, because these models were stripped away from women, stripped away from the conscious human psyche in our dominant cultures, suppressed in us for generations. And this has been the detriment to both women and men, the detriment to all humans. Raphael Patai wrote, "There is in man, beyond the psychological need for a father symbol, an equally great or possibly even greater need, that of the divine woman, who appears in many different forms throughout the world, yet remains basically the same everywhere." So at the time that the goddess was crossing my path in that painful time of void, I started writing poetry to give voice to what I was experiencing. And even that experience was revelatory to me, just letting the pen take me away. This one's called Mother Soil. "The black night of the soul, the great black void, is where with bare hands I till and turn rich mother soil, sacred emptiness, the very place of the inception of the seed of infinite possibility." Mother soil was just coming very alive for me, became very real. And the names of the sacred feminine that were being revealed to me through my studies, through my reading, through my own inner knowing, the mother of all things, she who dwells within, the mother of songs, wise woman, the lady of the universe, queen of heaven, her holiness, the lady of the high place, eye of wisdom, the serpent lady, lady of the sycamore, governess of the elements, mother of the stars. On and on and on. She has many, many, many names. Merlin Stone wrote, "In the beginning, people prayed to the creatress of life. At the very dawn of religion, God was a woman." Most of us have not been, and this could be different in the New World Women community, which is good, but most of us, and I know in my walks in the world, in the different kinds of work that I do, I know that not everybody is as saturated in this as I am and have been. Many have not been introduced to our shared history before the written word, when our foremothers and forefathers knew the goddess. Our blueprint, our human history, representing 90% of our human history, gives us a foundational model of balance. These are cultures where the energy behind all things, where the creator was sensed as female. And these cultures, where they still exist with indigenous peoples today, these cultures behave very differently than in cultures where the creator is male. Dr. Eleanor Gayden, cultural historian, outlined the tenets of our modern cultures as follows. A male god created the universe. Humans have the right to dominate nature. Man has the right to dominate woman. Our natural blueprint, however, is to be in balance of the male and female, of the masculine and feminine energies that are a part of all of us. Our brothers and sisters around the world who live in indigenous cultures today know a different reality. Most of these cultures are matriarchal. Now, matriarchal cultures, matriarchy is not an inverted mirror of patriarchy with women in power over men. There are no such cultures. Matriarchal cultures are egalitarian. This is our blueprint. Professor Peggy Reeves Sanday, an anthropologist, University of Pennsylvania, conducted a survey of 150 cultures, 150 tribal cultures. And in looking at these cultures, the persons in a culture who are thought to embody the creative forces of nature are perceived as powerful. And origin myths play a very big role in the concepts of power in any culture. So what does the creator look like? Who is the creator? And what are its attributes? Sanday described cultures that hold the feminine as sacred, and she says that there's a clear connection between goddess veneration and participation of women in sacral roles, a positive view of nature, connection to the land, and female power in society. We can't even conceive of living without gender hierarchy. We are like the very popular image of a fish swimming around in a glass bowl who cannot conceive of a reality beyond the water in which it swims. Patriarchy is all we've known. And the fact is that gender hierarchy harms both women and men. It harms us all, no matter what bodies we're walking around in. No matter how we identify, we are all a beautiful, unique, and lovely blend of masculine and feminine energies. When I talk about the feminine and the goddess, the feminine and the goddess, I like to come through the lens of the archetypes, because archetypes belong to all of us. Maybe it's because I'm a psychology major from school. Carl Jung, who was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud, gave us the archetypes. An archetype is an inward image in the human psyche that exerts a powerful influence on the nature of an individual personality and in turn on the larger culture. I'm going to repeat that. An archetype is an inward image in the human psyche that exerts a powerful influence on the nature of an individual and in turn on the larger culture. So in sharing this message for 25 years, for me, it's not a religious discussion. It's not an assertion of any particular gender of the deity or even the existence of a personified deity. Both God and goddess are archetypes, but unlike any of the other archetypes, and there are many, God and goddess are, of course, transcendent. They are so much more than any word or definition can contain. But as archetypes, these images, these concepts, they affect us all, even if we are agnostic or atheist. The dominant model of a supreme male deity affects us all. And energizing the long-suppressed female images of the divine feminine deity also affects us all, energizing this female image of the divine. And that's where we come in, Dawn. You all on this call and me, New World Women, when we see ourselves in the image and likeness of the divine, it affects us first on a deeply personal level. It is transformative. And then it affects everybody we touch in every sphere that we touch people. So here's another poem that emerged for me during the time when the sacred feminine energy was first coming into my life. And I hope that you'll feel it in you as well. This one is called The Tree of Life. The tree of life has taken root and is growing now within me. She and I are one. I surge up unstoppable. My blossom branches expand into the world, expressing my compassion, my strength. My roots reach down deep into Mother Soil, grounding and centering, drawing up the nourishing remembrance of who I am. Limb by limb, petal by petal, leaf by leaf, I flourish as she courses through me. That's the collective for me. Of New World Women, that energy coming up through our collective roots and out into the world, leaf by leaf, petal by petal, we flourish. At the time that I was first crossing, entering into this energy of the goddess, I began saturating myself in images of the sacred feminine, both the contemporary images and art that honors women, as well as the ancient Paleolithic and Neolithic images of the goddess. And when I saw these images, when I first saw them, I felt a remembering. And when I started sharing them with audiences across the US, Canada, Kauai to Dubai, I saw the remembering that happened in audiences, and I was told about it. Some of these goddesses are right here with me, and I'm going to share them with you. I've had these statues with me for a long time. They're very dear friends to me. This is the goddess of Willendorf. She is from the Upper Paleolithic era, the Late Stone Age, which spans 40,000 to 9,000 years BCE. So this is one of the Paleolithic goddesses. She's typical of the goddesses of that era. She's round and grounded and full, and she has these beautiful prominent breasts and her beautiful belly and her beautiful buttocks. And she's peaceful yet powerful. She's abundant and life-giving. Here we see the great mother who has birthed all of creation, and in her abundance, she gives all of her love and nurturance to all that she loves so dearly, this beautiful goddess of Willendorf. Now, can you imagine if the world saw her as God? This is the goddess of Thrace. She's from the Black Sea region of central Bulgaria. She's circa 4,500 years BC. Her breasts and her sacred yoni are clearly outlined. She has these beautiful markings on her that represent snakes and water. She's very gentle, easy, and peaceful with a smile on her face. The original, when viewed from the side, she's clearly pregnant. So she's gestating all of life. And so she's gestating all of creation, the mother of all things, bringing forth life in her abundance. Let's see who I have here. Oh, this is the Nile goddess of early Egypt. Now, you know, try that one for yourself. Just put your arms up. Open all of this up. Put your arms up in the great glory that you are, that you represent, and that courses through you. Her arms are up in a crescent shape to the moon, the Nile goddess. Her head is shaped like a bird. In pre-dynastic Egypt, can you see that? I don't know. In pre-dynastic Egypt, Nekhbet, the vulture goddess, and Wadjet, the cobra goddess, together created the world. The word mother is depicted by the vulture hieroglyph. The vulture is the symbol of the intimate relationship between life and death. One comes from the other. There's nothing lost. There's nothing wasted. There is no end. It's the eternal cycle of birth, growth, death, renewal. Do this every day. Do this every day. And you know who else is doing this? Look at this beautiful serpent goddess, circa 1800 years BCE from Crete. This goddess is from the goddess venerating Minoan culture. The Minoan culture was wealthy. It was highly sophisticated. It was artistic. It was peaceful. And it was goddess venerating. The serpent goddess holds a writhing snake in either hand. I mean, imagine that. Imagine holding a snake in your hands. She is both goddess and priestess, and she stands with authority in her life. She's got this unwavering gaze, trance-like and powerful. She can see through anything. She's fully channeling her power, and her power is never power over. Her power says, I represent life. I represent thriving. That's what I stand for. Ooh. Feel that. Your body's powerful. Try that and hold those writhing snakes in your hand, unless you're afraid of snakes. But I tell you, if you stick with the goddess for a while, you'll see them quite differently. This is Isis. She's the daughter of Nuit with her son Horus. So through time, Isis took on the attributes of the creator. In the beginning, there was Isis, oldest of the old, from whom all becoming arose. She has her temple in Sais, Egypt, and on that temple are inscribed the words, I am all that was, that is, and that is yet to come. And those words appeared later in the New Testament. And then on her temple in Dendera are inscribed the words, come to me, all of you who are heavy laden, and I will refresh you. And those words also appeared in the New Testament when Jesus spoke them. The first words actually appeared in Revelation 1:8. So veneration of Isis, I always thought of when I was learning, I thought that Isis was Egypt, 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 but actually her worship continued until 400 CE, and it was widespread. It was all throughout Europe. So she was the star of the sea. She was the queen of heaven. And these titles were later ascribed to the Virgin Mary. And the sacred places and temples of Isis were also rededicated to the Virgin. And then you see the thread through. Here's the beautiful one of the Black Madonnas. There are over 500 of these in Europe and South America. And the Catholic Church had this wonderful way of incorporating pagan practices and relics into Christianity. So the Black Madonnas are connected to Isis and Mary Magdalene, and also to the goddess locations. So she's beautiful. She's the beautiful Black Madonna. The goddesses Inanna, Artemis, Diana, Ceres, Cybele, and Isis have been depicted as black. Black in the goddess worldview is a holy and sacred color. Our minds have been trained to be very polarized, with a generality that says the light and the white are good, the darkness and the black are bad. Goddess cultures are holistic. Light and dark are integral to the whole. And as Dawn said, in her opening, we come and we bring our light and we bring our shadow. This is the human condition, and we have love, love for all of it. This is the mother. She has love for all of it too. It's not about being polarized. Black is also the color of the metaphorical great black void, the emptiness, the very place of the inception of the seed of infinite possibility, like in my poem. So the story of the goddess goes on and on and on, and it goes on and on and underground in our psyches. But she's gaining energy. She's gaining energy. Here we are on this beautiful Zoom, talking about her, energizing her in our own bones and blood. My concept of female beauty also changed permanently when I saturated myself in all of these images. I mean, how can you, you know, you see all of this beauty and power and strength in so many different body types? and in the many ways that we show up as women. It's all sacred and it's all beautiful. And every stage of our lives is beautiful. Maiden, mother, and crone, wise woman. So these images that we energize ourselves and bring forward for ourselves and for the world, it's very powerful. And what a huge and powerful effect we have on our daughters when we embrace ourselves as we are and when we embrace other women as they are. I used to change all kinds of songs and stories for my daughter so that there was always this wonderful celebration of women and girls and many, many, many forms of beauty. Like you, I'm surrounded by a cultural wallpaper that tells me I am just not good enough. It's a constant message. It's what the culture is built on. Just not good enough. And it really takes practice. It takes spiritual practice to counter that. And I think that New World Women is offering content that supports this kind of spiritual practice. I mean, us being together is a kind of spiritual practice to counteract that wallpaper. Goodbye. We are planting new seeds here. We are creating a new reality. It's getting bigger and bigger and brighter and stronger and lighter and darker and balanced. And we're doing this together. You know, we have to counter also the deep psychological shackles that are a part of patriarchy that we carry around in our psyches. And I'll go into this just a little bit right now, but it is a big part. You know, it's part of my book and it's part of my film and it's part of the play that I first did and my one woman show. But I had a prop and it was called The Heavy Book of History. And it was like this black book prop with the gold embossing on it. And I would darken the theater, it would go black. And then it would just be one spotlight to read. The male is by nature superior and the female inferior. The one rules and the other is ruled. This principle of necessity extends to all mankind. Aristotle, 4th century BCE. Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God and King of the universe, that thou didst not create me, a woman. Orthodox Jewish prayer. Killing a woman, like the drinking of liquor, is only a minor offense. Hindu Code of Manu, 100 CE. If you care for a son, you don't go easy on his studies. If you care for a daughter, you don't go easy on her foot binding. Chinese saying. Men have authority over women because God has made one superior to the other. The Quran, 650 CE. Woman is the gate of the devil, the sting of the serpent. In a word, a perilous object. St. Jerome, 4th century. What else is woman but a foe to friendship, an inescapable punishment, a necessary evil, a natural temptation, a desirable calamity, a domestic danger, an evil of nature painted in fair colors? Malleus Maleficarum by the Reverends Henrik Kramer and Jacob Sprenger, written in 1486 with the full support of Pope Innocent VIII. It was the indispensable authority for 3 centuries of persecution of women throughout Europe. The readings from the Heavy Book of History in my presentations go on right up to the modern times, right up to the fathers of psychology who outlined the symptoms of hysteria. The root word for that is hysteros or uterus, because hysteria was a label that would allow you to send a woman to an asylum on the word of her father, on the word of her husband, on the word of her son. These are the proscriptions. This is the history that, once again, this is the history that most of us don't know about. We don't read about the burning times in school. We don't learn about the persecution of women and the way this completely disrupted the psyches of men and women, because it it harmed men too. Yes, men are on the upper level in terms of the hierarchy, but psychically, the damage is horrific. How can you feel safe loving a woman knowing she can be taken as a witch and you can be accused as a witch? How can a boy born of a mother who loves his mother, and in a sense, you know, she's everything. She's his mother. But then he grows and he starts to look around and he starts to learn, oh, what? Oh, women are less than. Oh, big psychic wound. You know, is it any wonder that we become afraid to stand up, you know, to stand out, to speak up, to be noticed, to take leadership, to take power? Is it any wonder? No. But again, New World women, we come together, we talk, we support, we share, we develop that courage. We develop that. Courage is also extremely vulnerable. It's having the courage to be in that vulnerability to say, I'm going to let my love and my heart act here. And we support that for one another. We are designed, our blueprint is truly to be in balance. So balance of the male and female, balance of the feminine energies that course through all of us and any body that we're walking around in, no matter how we identify. I'm noticing the time, and I'm hoping that I have another few minutes. I just want to touch on our brains and how they're meant to be, you know, how we're supposed to be balanced. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Dawn. Thank you. So another critical way that we're designed to be in balance is the way we use our brilliant and beautiful and amazing human brains. Like all of our fellow creatures, from fish to reptiles to amphibians and mammals, we possess an asymmetrical brain with a left and right hemisphere. And they're connected by a connecting piece called the corpus callosum. The hemispheres are specialized to different activities, so different functions. So both sides of our brains are at work at all times for all tasks, and yet we attend to the world. We pay attention to the world from one side or the other, from the right or the left. And depending on how we are attending to the world, it will indicate what world we're seeing, what world we're creating, depending on how we attend to the world. Professor Roger Sperry, Nobel Prize-winning psychobiologist, wrote, "There appear to be two modes of thinking, verbal and nonverbal, represented by the left and right hemispheres respectively, and our education system, as well as science in general, tend to neglect the nonverbal form of intellect. What it comes down to is that modern society discriminates against the right hemisphere." Albert Einstein is said to have written, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is its faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant, but has forgotten the gift." So, There's another doctor, Ian McGilchrist, who I love. He's really a wonderful resource for the latest brain research. And he says, it's not what each hemisphere does, but how it does it that matters. Each hemisphere is involved in everything, true enough, just quite in a different way. In the history of our species, we have the hunter-gatherer society that describes the model for human societies for 12,000 years ago, going back 12,000 years ago, occupying 90% of our history, going back even further. That hunter-gatherer society is so intrinsically that our brains developed under that model. So it's an intrinsic part of who we are. Logical, hierarchical, linear, verbal, and abstract are generally characteristics of the left hemisphere of the brain, the masculine hunter-killer hemisphere. And the right hemisphere is the feminine gatherer-nurturer hemisphere, empathetic, holistic, present, non-speech, verbal, metaphorical, and empathetic. These are all considered the attributes of this feminine gatherer-nurturer side. And the idea is that we work in balance. So the right hemisphere, it's so important. It brings us empathy and a very deep relation to the other. The right hemisphere is the big picture hemisphere. And just think of it this way. So our right hemispheres are always, in the very simplest terms, they're always looking at everything that's happening all around us. As just like amphibians and birds and, you know, other mammals, the right hemisphere takes in the big picture, the full happening. The left hemisphere is focusing on targeting something to eat. So it focuses, it manipulates, it grasps, it focuses. And the idea is that, take for example, a bird is looking for the perfect worm to eat. So it's got to focus using its right eye, left hemisphere focusing, while the left eye, right hemisphere is looking around to make sure that while it's trying to find something to eat, something doesn't swoop down and eat it. This is how we are all functioning. The key thing about the right hemisphere, that feminine gatherer nurture hemisphere that sees the big picture, that's the wise hemisphere, if you will, because that always stops and looks at what's actually happening now. And it's very deeply in relationship with the other. The left hemisphere kind of lives in its own self-referenced space. So it's kind of isolated. Now, in our cultures, we tend to value more of that left hemispheric, logical, linear pathway for the discourse of our society. But the problem is that we lose the sense of the other, and we lose the sense of the big picture and the wisdom. So I could get into more of this, but I'm going to try to wrap it up a bit to say that we are designed to be in balance. And as women on a regular basis, the things that help us to come more into our right brain presence, and there are many ways to do it, yoga and breathing, walks in nature, music, gazing at a favorite pet, a favorite friend, things that take you out of that constant chatter of the left hemisphere. This is going to be very important for us. It's also going to be very important for us to model that for children, because we're in a very teetering spot right now. We're in a teetering spot mostly because of these. This is a big, big influence on us right now that's drawing us really deeply into the abstract world. So to be continued at some point, and I get into it in my book, I do, but I'm going to respect our time. Oh, thank you.
Well, I know I speak for everyone on this call when I say that what you just shared is really truly the energy of New World Women. And thank you for all of the research that you've done and your magnificent presence as you are teaching us, reawakening, reminding us of what we know inside to be true. And the word that comes to mind for me about what you did, what you just shared with us, is delicious. It was delicious. And I know we're all hungering for more, and we are so grateful that we will be able to share your teachings in greater depth. Very soon, in the next few months, we'll be able to share those for the members of New World Women once we launch, which will be on April 29th. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dale. That was extraordinary. This is Dale's book. I love it. And her film, In Our Right Minds, is extraordinary. And we are thinking of doing a watch party in New World Women, and then a discussion that you can lead for us. So we'll have more information on that as well. So, all right. Thank you. Thank you.
Please visit newworldwomen.com to learn more about our exciting collaboration and how it can support you and other women in your life. We would love to welcome you into our first founder circle, which you can explore on our site. If you like Collaboration is Queen, please give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends. Thank you, and remember to keep your crown ready so women can collaborate to create a new world for themselves and for our world, a world of love, inclusion, collaboration, and abundance.